Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay, reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, February 22, 2024. Four Stripes employees arrested for organized lottery ticket theft amounting to $26,000. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Four Stripes convenience store employees were arrested earlier this month after a manager discovered $26,000 in stolen lottery tickets in January. Presidio residents Maricela Villa, 25, Celine Renteria, 27, Cassandra Velasquez, 21, and Marfa resident Margaret Leon, 55, were arrested on February 5th and 6th for theft and organized retail theft charges. Both are state jail felony charges, with the second charge punishable by jail time of up to 2 years and a fine of up to $10,000. The Marfa Police Department first became aware of the situation when the Stripes' regional manager filed complaints on the four employees on January 5, 2024, according to Lieutenant Nicole Fuentes. Fuentes said the manager discovered the stolen lottery tickets during a routine inventory process. The four women are estimated to have stolen around $26,000 in lottery tickets. Fuentes said that number could increase as the case is still under investigation. The thefts occurred from what is colloquially known as Little Stripes on the west side of town, which has recently been rebranded as Sunoco. Fuentes declined to provide specifics on the organized nature of the crime or how the employees were working together, citing the fact that it is an ongoing investigation. The timeline of how long the employees were conspiring to steal lottery tickets is still under investigation, she said. Renteria and Villa were taken into custody at the Marfa Border Patrol checkpoint. Leon was arrested at Little Stripes, and Velasquez was arrested at the Presidio Port of Entry, according to arrest reports from the Presidio County Sheriff's Office. All four women were booked into the Presidio County Jail and were let out on $12,000 surety bonds, according to the arrest reports. Fuentes said the case will now be forwarded to the district attorney for final review and prosecution. 7-Eleven Incorporated, which owns Stripes Convenience Stores and Sunoco, did not respond to immediate requests for comment. The primary investigating officer is Marfa Police Department Officer Ian Martinez. This is Kay, reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, February 22, 2024. Obituaries. De La O. On February 10, 2024, David M. De La O was welcomed into his heavenly home. Born in Alpine, Texas on April 14, 1955, David lived a life that was as bold and unyielding as the West Texas sunsets. A combination of survival street smarts, the cunning of Tuco, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the true grit spirit of John Wayne, David navigated life's challenges with a unique blend of wit and determination. He was a man of unwavering integrity who spoke his mind fearlessly. Yet beneath his rugged exterior lay a heart of compassion filled with love for his family, friends, and all creatures great and small. David's memory will be cherished by his devoted wife, Diana, and his beloved sons, David, husband to Chris Santa and father to Alejandro, Sophia, Christian, and Olivia, along with Aaron, who is married to Jordan. His legacy will also live on through his treasured siblings, Virginia, Fred, Roman, Robert, Claudio, Alicia, Celia, and Clelia, and his faithful four-legged friend, Scooter. We bid farewell to his extraordinary soul. We extend our deepest condolences to those he held dear. While we mourn the loss of this one-of-a-kind man, we find comfort in knowing that he has found peace in his heavenly home. Porque para mí el vivir es Cristo y el morir es ganancia. Filipenses 1:21. And I apologize for my pronunciation. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that any financial support be directed toward defraying the expenses of David's final journey home. Your generosity will help alleviate the burden upon his loved ones and ensure that he receives the respectful send-off he deserves. David M. De La O., a man who lived life on his own terms, will forever be remembered and cherished in our hearts. May his legacy continue to inspire us to live our lives with courage, compassion, and an unwavering belief in our own unique paths.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, February 22nd, 2024. City Council hears pros and cons of Ag Barn in the city limits. The ongoing saga of new agricultural sciences Ag Barn facility for the high school made its way to City Hall last Thursday as those for and against a new facility filled the chambers for the regularly scheduled meeting. The item was listed under presentations on the agenda, which means the item was not up for a vote by the council. The school district decided on January 22nd that it wanted to build the Ag Barn on school property adjacent to the high school. But the district would need to ask the city council for exemptions due to livestock located in the facility. I didn't know I was going to do a presentation, but I read it in the paper this morning, said Superintendent Zamora. When I spoke to Mr. Rodriguez, I said I would be here for questions. The agenda item was listed under presentations on the agenda provided to the Pioneer and the public by the city secretary. Zamora gave an overview of what the district wants to do. I figured I'd just come and let everybody know and hear it from the horse's mouth what our intention is. And what our intention is to serve our kids the best way possible. You know, we want a safe environment for our students, and we want to provide facilities that were promised during the bond. Zamora said that when he first arrived and toured the facilities, one of the first questions he had was why the Ag Barn was so far away. The answer was given to me is because the city ordinance that prevents us from having livestock within the city. That was a decision that took place a quarter, 50 years ago. However long ago it was, and I spoke to Mr. Rodriguez, and I think we have an opportunity here to place the facility somewhere where our students can access it immediately, where it's visible, rather than being on the dark side of the city and within the city limits. Zamora said that while the decision has been made to build a new barn, the only way the old barn would be torn down is if the new one were constructed. He said that the illustration on the front page of the Pioneer is not a rendering of what the district plans to build. It's a rendering of the renovation of the old barn before the architects realized they do not have an engineer's stamp. Editor's note, the rendering published in the Pioneer was part of a media packet provided by the city, and nowhere in the packet is it noted that the rendering is outdated. Zamora said that the new facility would provide classroom space, a lab, restrooms, and an area where the students could interact with the animals and would only include a minimal number of animals, noting that 4 swine were located at the Ag Barn this school year. We're taking a minimal amount of animals and the possibility that exists in us putting a facility over there that, for the most part, would be enclosed. We did not want to have a place that we could park some of the trailers underneath to keep them out of the sun. I believe, as the crow flies, based on what I measured on Google Maps, the closest home is approximately 600 yards away. Zamora also mentioned rumors that he has heard about a slaughterhouse being placed there, or 100 animals at the facility. Really, what we're looking for is a facility that our kids can have animals within the city, seasonally, and when given the opportunity, during the school day, going over there and participate within that lab in a place that has restrooms and facilities. And for the animals that are larger, still maintain what we have over there, the current ag barn. School board member and Booster Club president Jennifer Gonzalez said she wanted to quell a few claims that are floating around and answer questions about what the facility is used for. She said rumors of a slaughterhouse were not just a no, but a hard no, and that the barn would have a facility to keep the animal odors at a minimum. She also said larger livestock, such as cows and horses, are a hard no, saying animals kept there would be pigs, lambs, and goats. Having the ag science facility close to the school really opens a lot of time for our students and Mrs. Galindo as well, with possibilities of any future clinics that we may have at the high school. Having the ag facility near the high school will be effortless to supervise projects, clean up, and upkeep while tending to animals, or mentorship opportunities with our goal of developing a mentor program with special ed kids. Having the ag facility closer to the school will give other academic groups within our campus more opportunities to gain experience with something new, not to mention hosting a future event for our special ed kids and showing projects as well. For Stockton High School senior, Hector Martinez said relocating the ag barn to the high school would bring extended opportunities to the program. With the ag barn close in proximity, it would allow for the development of easily accessible livestock projects, outdoor classroom experiences, and the personal development of agricultural life. Paul Henderson said that Dr. Zamora was correct in saying that the ag barn has not housed more than 4 or 5 hogs out there the last 2 years. They're wanting to build the program, that's what they're saying, build a new barn. We're going to build this program. So what are you going to do if you move it in there and you get 30 or 40 hogs? You can't perfume hog mess. There's no way. What you're doing with the people who have property up there and their property values. Henderson alluded that it would hurt if someone were looking at a house and gets wind of the barn, or if the wind blows during a game when there are people in the stands, adding that the school has plenty of property near the current ag barn. Build it out there. It doesn't affect people in town. I am all for the ag program, but I'm tired of this wasting of money that's going on and this deal about putting it in town. It belongs in the country. Zana Matthews Hansen spoke, saying that the FA program has grown her daughter, who is the Fort Stockton High School chapter secretary and the district reporter. I would love to have other kiddos grow and learn leadership skills through this program because it's more than showing, Hansen said, adding that she would love for the kids to grow in the program in a safe manner close to the school. Juanita Dominguez lives across the street from the school tennis courts and said she recently bought her home and sometimes in the summer there's sewer odor, and if the ag barn is nearby, that would be worse. Now I'm going to sit out there and I'm going to enjoy all the manure smell. Right now, you have 2 or 3 pigs, but maybe in the future, you might have more. So does this mean I can have a cow in my yard? I mean, I'm not happy with this. I don't like the stench of the sewer, and I'm not going to like the stench of the cows. She added that as far as safety, the kids speed along her road going to Midland College's campus, so it will not be safe. County Judge Schuster added that the smell would not be confined to the neighborhood around the facility, but would spread all over town. The reason there was an ordinance put in was simple. People in town don't want animals inside the city limits. They didn't want to have to put up with the noise, flies, smell, or any of that. And I agree. I'm all about FFA and 4-H, but there's a place for it, and the place is in ag barns, and ag barns belong outside the city limits. I would urge the council, when they take this up, to be cognizant of the fact that you serve the people. You do not serve the schools or the school board. They need to make that decision among themselves. Zamora said that when he talks about safety, he means that the current barn is isolated and nobody can see you, adding that the district is not starting a whole stockade over there. We're saying that we want a facility where animals can come and be displayed and they can practice, and maybe they stay there for a few days. But at the end of the day, we will have this other facility there and improve. It's going to be a place for our kids to learn to bring an animal and learn how to shear and then get it back to where it belongs in safety to do that. The item was not an action item, so the council did not vote on anything. And the mayor said the council would not be deciding at this meeting. Thank you all for telling us how you felt. Some people are for it, some are against, and we get that. At some point in the future, we'll step down and put it on the agenda as an action item, but that's to be addressed later. Councilmember Ruben Falco asked if the district had chosen a final site for the facility at the high school, to which Zamora replied, no. I don't know what we're doing here. If y'all haven't voted on this yet, I don't know why these people have to be here and we have to listen to it. Zamora said the school board voted to draft a letter of intent to request a variance and has not decided what the facility is going to be and whether it can be built adjacent to the school or whether it must choose another location. If it's allowed to be built at the school, it would be more of a career technology education lab with a space for animals and trailers. If it must be built outside the city limits, it changes the scope of the project. That's why we needed to know, is there an exemption or not? County approves adding Longfellow Road to CTIF grant. Longfellow Road will soon see improvements after the Pecos County Commissioner's Court voted to add it to the Pecos County CTIF grant project. It granted Pecos County a little more than $5 million so that we can improve more roads than what the county can afford, said Joe Schuster, to keep them up to date either by caliche or by pavement. This is all done by legislature, so we're thinking that they're probably going to offer that to us in the next legislature too. The funds granted are used in all four county precincts, and Precinct 1 is slated for some improvements, and the court wanted to use remaining funds that 1 was not going to use for other projects across the county. The county would then request more money. Those counties that turn back money, they're kind of thought of not well, Schuster said. So that's why we're going to make sure we've got our money spent. In other action, the commissioners discussed the following items. Approved an authorization to issue requests for proposals for administrative services and requests for qualifications for engineering services administered by the TDA. This year, the county hopes to finish a pipeline for Precinct 4 in Kyanosa. The court tabled discussion of the Pecos County Historical Commission's annual report and approved a line item of $6,000 for the Pecos County Historical Commission of emergency replacement of heating and cooling system for the Rollins-Sibley House. They approved a grant application for the district attorney and certifying the Pecos County will not reduce the amounts of funds provided to the 83rd District Attorney's Office because of the grant funds provided under local government code. Voted to allow Precinct 3 to change previous budgeted item funds for clubhouse paint and new pond to fencing for the Iran Golf Course. Commissioner Mickey Perry said the precinct has money for paint that is not going to use and wants to use the money for fencing. They voted to approve to renew the Pecos County guidelines and criteria for tax abatement. They approved a budget, quote, for the firewall replacement. The county budgeted $25,000, but the price is $17,500. Approved a lease for services agreement between Precinct 1 and Apertex Corporation due to Southwest Security Alarm Systems trans- positioning to Apertex. Approved a request from the Pecos County Sheriff's Office to purchase thermal monoculars and binoculars to be reimbursed from the grant. Approved a resolution referenced to the Pecos County Operation Lone Star Grant Program for the Pecos County Sheriff's Office. Accepted a donation of foam from Oxy Petroleum Corporation to the fire department. The court voted to allow Precinct 4 to engage in the following budget projects. Basketball court lights and baseball field repairs in Fort Stockton, Precinct 4, Imperial Community Building, bathroom and kitchen flooring and shade, Imperial Cemetery, fence, sign, landscape and sprinklers, Imperial Park sprinklers, basketball lights and trees, Kyanosa pool improvements and Kyanosa Park improvements and basketball court lights. Operation Lone Star boosts support for deployed Texas National Guard soldiers. Governor Greg Abbott, the DPS, and Texas National Guard continue to work together to secure the border, stop the smuggling of drugs, weapons, and people into Texas, and prevent, detect, and interdict transitional criminal activity between ports of entry. Since the launch of Operation Lone Star, the multi-agency effort has led to over 5,000 illegal immigrant apprehensions and more than 39,500 criminal arrests, with more than 35,600 felony charges. In the fight against fentanyl crisis, Texas law enforcement has seized over 467 million lethal doses of fentanyl during this border mission. Operation Lone Star continues to fill the dangerous gaps created by the Biden administration's refusal to secure the border. Every individual who is apprehended or arrested and every ounce of drugs seized would have otherwise made their way into communities across Texas and the nation due to the president's open border policies. Abbott expands border security operations in Eagle Pass. He announced that Texas is establishing a forward operating base in the Del Rio sector to house Texas National Guard soldiers that are responding to President Biden's border crisis during the press conference in Eagle Pass. Before now, Texas National Guard has been scattered across the entire region in cramped quarters, away from fellow soldiers and sometimes traveling long distances to their job. This base camp is going to dramatically improve conditions for our soldiers. Texas would not be able to respond to President Biden's border crisis without the brave men and women of the Texas National Guard, and it's essential to build this base camp for them. Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, February 22nd, 2024. City Council hears pros and cons of Ag Barn in the city limits. The ongoing saga of new agricultural sciences Ag Barn facility for the high school made its way to City Hall last Thursday as those for and against a new facility filled the chambers for the regularly scheduled meeting. The item was listed under presentations on the agenda, which means the item was not up for a vote by the council. The school district decided on January 22nd that it wanted to build the Ag Barn on school property adjacent to the high school. But the district would need to ask the city council for exemptions due to livestock located in the facility. I didn't know I was going to do a presentation, but I read it in the paper this morning, said Superintendent Zamora. When I spoke to Mr. Rodriguez, I said I would be here for questions. The agenda item was listed under presentations on the agenda provided to the Pioneer and the public by the city secretary. Zamora gave an overview of what the district wants to do. I figured I'd just come and let everybody know and hear it from the horse's mouth what our intention is. And what our intention is to serve our kids the best way possible. You know, we want a safe environment for our students, and we want to provide facilities that were promised during the bond. Zamora said that when he first arrived and toured the facilities, one of the first questions he had was why the Ag Barn was so far away. The answer was given to me is because the city ordinance that prevents us from having livestock within the city. That was a decision that took place 50 years ago. however long ago it was, and I spoke to Mr. Rodriguez, and I think we have an opportunity here to place the facility somewhere where our students can access it immediately, where it's visible, rather than being on the dark side of the city and within the city limits. Zamora said that while the decision has been made to build a new barn, the only way the old barn would be torn down is if the new one were constructed. He said that the illustration on the front page of the Pioneer is not a rendering of what the district plans to build. It's a rendering of the renovation of the old barn before the architects realized they do not have an engineer's stamp. Editor's note. The rendering published in the Pioneer was part of a media packet provided by the city, and nowhere in the packet is it noted that the rendering is outdated. Zamora said that the new facility would provide classroom space, a lab, restrooms, and an area where the students could interact with the animals and would only include a minimal number of animals, noting that 4 swine were located at the egg barn this school year. We're taking a minimal amount of animals, and the possibility that exists in us putting a facility over there that, for the most part, would be enclosed. We do not want to have a place that we can park some of the trailers underneath to keep them out of the sun. I believe, as the crow flies, based on what I measured on Google Maps, the closest home is approximately 600 yards away. Zamora also mentioned rumors that he has heard about a slaughterhouse being placed there, or 100 animals at the facility. Really, what we're looking for is a facility that our kids can have animals within the city, seasonally, and when given the opportunity, during the school day, going over there and participate within that lab in a place that has restrooms and facilities. And for the animals that are larger, still maintain what we have over there, the current ag barn. School board member and Booster Club president Jennifer Gonzalez said she wanted to quell a few claims that are floating around and answer questions about what the facility is used for. She said rumors of a slaughterhouse were not just a no, but a hard no, and that the barn would have a facility to keep the animal odors at a minimum. She also said larger livestock, such as cows and horses, are a hard no, saying animals kept there would be pigs, lambs, and goats. Having the ag science facility close to the school really opens a lot of time for our students and Mrs. Galindo as well, with possibilities of any future clinics that we may have at the high school. Having the ag facility near the high school will be effortless to supervise projects, clean up, and upkeep while tending to animals, or mentorship opportunities with our goal of developing a mentor program with special ed kids. Having the ag facility closer to that school will give other academic groups within our campus more opportunities to gain experience with something new, not to mention hosting a future event for our special ed kids and showing projects as well. For Stockton High School senior, Hector Martinez said relocating the ag barn to the high school would bring extended opportunities to the program. With the ag barn close in proximity, it would allow for the development of easily accessible livestock projects, outdoor classroom experiences, and the personal development of agricultural life. Paul Henderson said that Dr. Zamora was correct in saying that the ag barn has not housed more than 4 or 5 hogs out there the last 2 years. They're wanting to build the program, that's what they're saying, build a new barn. We're going to build this program. So, what are you going to do if you move it in there and you get 30 or 40 hogs? You can't perfume hog mess. There's no way. What you're doing with the people who have property up there and their property values. Henderson alluded that it would hurt if someone were looking at a house and gets wind of the barn, or if the wind blows during a game when there are people in the stands, adding that the school has plenty of property near the current ag barn. Build it out there. It doesn't affect people in town. I am all for the ag program, but I'm tired of this wasting of money that's going on and this deal about putting it in town. It belongs in the country. Zana Matthews Hansen spoke, saying that the FA program has grown her daughter, who is the Fort Stockton High School chapter secretary and the district reporter. I would love to have other kiddos grow and learn leadership skills through this program because it's more than showing, Hanson said, adding that she would love for the kids to grow in the program in a safe manner close to the school. Juanita Dominguez lives across the street from the school tennis courts and said she recently bought her home, and sometimes in the summer there's sewer odor, and if the Ag Barn is nearby, that would be worse. Now I'm going to sit out there and I'm going to enjoy all the manure smell. Right now, you have two or three pigs, but maybe in the future, you might have more. So does this mean I can have a cow in my yard? I mean, I'm not happy with this. I don't like the stench of the sewer, and I'm not going to like the stench of the cows. She added that as far as safety, the kids speed along her road going to Midland College's campus, so it will not be safe. County Judge Schuster added that the smell would not be confined to the neighborhood around the facility, but would spread all over town. The reason there was an ordinance put in was simple. People in town don't want animals inside the city limits. They didn't want to have to put up with the noise, flies, smell, or any of that. And I agree. I'm all about FFA and 4-H, but there's a place for it, and the place is in ag barns, and ag barns belong outside the city limits. I would urge the council, when they take this up, to be cognizant of the fact that you serve the people. You do not serve the schools or the school board. They need to make that decision among themselves. Zamora said that when he talks about safety, he means that the current barn is isolated and nobody can see you, adding that the district is not starting a whole stockade over there. We're saying that we want a facility where animals can come and be displayed and they can practice, and maybe they stay there for a few days. But at the end of the day, we will have this other facility there and improve. It's going to be a place for our kids to learn to bring an animal and learn how to shear and then get it back to where it belongs in safety to do that. The item was not an action item, so the council did not vote on anything. And the mayor said the council would not be deciding at this meeting. Thank you all for telling us how you felt. Some people are for it, some are against, and we get that. At some point in the future, we'll step down and put it on the agenda as an action item, but that's to be addressed later. Councilmember Ruben Falco asked if the district had chosen a final site for the facility at the high school, to which Zamora replied, no. I don't know what we're doing here. If y'all haven't voted on this yet, I don't know why these people have to be here and we have to listen to it. Zamora said the school board voted to draft a letter of intent to request a variance and has not decided what the facility is going to be and whether it can be built adjacent to the school or whether it must choose another location. If it's allowed to be built at the school, it would be more of a career technology education lab with a space for animals and trailers. If it must be built outside the city limits, it changes the scope of the project. That's why we needed to know, is there an exemption or not?
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, February 15th. City Council orders demolition and removal of 14th and Allen Street homes. Giel addresses council on sidewalk issue again. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. More long-running code enforcement issues are drawing to a close as the Monahan City Council orders the demolition of two more dilapidated structures within 30 days and to clean up the property on Bruce Street. Meeting in regular session on Tuesday, the council held two public hearings on the properties located at 518 West 14th Street, owned by Jose Vasquez, 1403 South Allen, owned by Betty Mings. The condition of the 14th Street home and property has been a long-running code enforcement saga even before the home caught fire in January 2022. The fire was later determined to be caused by space heaters being knocked over. The Allen Street home caught fire in October 2023 and has sat in the same state ever since. This is the second public hearing on the 14th Street home. The vote to demo the home last summer failed for a lack of a second at the close of the public hearing, and the owner was given more time to get the home back up to city code. City of Monahans Building Inspector Joel Melendez said both properties have been substantially damaged by fires and are not structurally safe. The public hearing gives the homeowners or any citizen an opportunity to speak on the property. Quote, "The properties meet the definition of a dangerous building as outlined in the City Code of Ordinances, and it is my suggestion as the building inspector for the city that this building be demolished in accordance to that definition," he said. Melendez showed aerial pictures to members of the council of both properties, which depicted the damage to the dilapidated homes by the fires. No one was present to speak on the Allen Street home, and Melendez told the council, even though they have received confirmation back from the post office that the owner did receive the notices sent regarding the property, the city has not heard any response from the owner. 14th Street property owner Jose Vasquez was present for the hearing to speak on his own behalf regarding his property, where he currently lives in a trailer that has water and utilities hooked up. Vasquez said he has done some work to the property and has done the best he could since he was given more time to fix the home last June. "Y'all are going to have to do what you're going to do, but this is all I have. I have been trying to do everything I can to rebuild this house," end quote. Vasquez asked the council for a little time to get some things out of the way of the damaged home. Quote, "If I could have a little time, I would greatly appreciate it. I am here to do the right thing and put my trust in the council that y'all will do the right thing. I know the council has given me more time already, but I am on it," he said. City Manager Rex Thee thanked Vasquez for addressing the council regarding the property. After the public hearings were closed, the council was then tasked with acting upon the findings and the order regarding the properties. The council determined both structures were unsafe based on the standards in the city's code of ordinances. Thee told the council since they found both properties unsafe, they had the option to give the owners a 30-day or 90-day option to demolish and remove the structure. Council members voted on the 30-day options for both properties and recommended the city disconnect water and all other utilities to the structures, which are the subjects for demolition, immediately. Quote, "If the owner does not comply with the order and demolish and remove the property, the city will step in and complete the work and put a lien on the property for the cost of demolition," Thee said. In related business, the council approved authorizing the city to clean up the property at 1003 South Bruce, owned by Johanna Gray, which has been the scene of at least four fires since May 2021. Since the fire May 2021, Gray has been staying on the property in an RV travel trailer, which fire officials were called out to in July 2022 after clothes in the RV caught fire. Gray was able to extinguish the small fire before firefighters arrived, and there was minimal damage to the RV as a result of the fire. In November 2022, council members determined the burnt home on the property was unsafe and may not be feasibly repaired, and Gray was given 10 days to clear everything out of the home and off the property and to demolish the structure. Because Gray didn't comply with the court order, the city stepped in and demolished the home and obtained a lien on the property for the cost of the demolition. The most recent fire was in December, which burned Gray's RV, garage, and a neighbor's fence and storage shed. Thee also showed the council photos of the burned property. The council voted to have the city clean the property and put another lien on the property. In presentation by citizens to be heard, resident Alan Gill addressed the council for a second time regarding the sidewalk in front of his home. Keel said his sidewalk is broken up and wants the city to pay for the repairs. He first spoke to the council in December and said, quote, "The sidewalk is an ongoing problem. It is damaged and has fallen in because there is no curb and gutter," end quote. At the time, Thieves said, quote, "If the contractor paid for the street, curb, and gutter to be installed when the house was built, it is the responsibility of the property owner. If the street, curb, and gutter was already there when the house was built, then the sidewalks would be the city's responsibility to repair it," end quote. Gale agreed to a meeting with Thee the next week, but Gale was back to address the council because he said, "Nothing has been done since we had the private meeting in December until I got a phone call today about 1:30 p.m. from Mr. Covington. We are getting somewhere, but what is going to stop the erosion? What is going to hold the soil in place from eroding to the street?" Thee said, quote, "We did have that meeting, and you provided a handwritten letter in December. I did get that in the file, but I did let it lapse a little while, but we are on it and going to get the sidewalk removed." Quote, "We still have to address the erosion issue. You can butcher the road however you want to, but the erosion will still be the issue," Gale added. Thee answered by saying, quote, "Homeowners all over the city have yards and are responsible with taking care of them," end quote. Gale said he understood the homeowner's responsibility and didn't have a problem maintaining his yard, but, quote, "It shouldn't be up to me to haul dirt in every time because there is nothing to hold the soil in place," end quote. Gale said the transportation code regarding road and the city's responsibility to the roads does apply, but Thee says it does not. Quote, "The law states a city has responsibility to streets and right-of-ways, and the city of Monahans has taken responsibility for the streets and right-of-ways by adopting ordinances which states a homeowner is responsible for the sidewalk in front of their house," Thee said. Keel added, "The Texas Department of Transportation out of Odessa said it does apply, and the city is reading the transportation code wrong. Quote, "This is something so simple, let's not make a fight about this. This is becoming a big issue, and it shouldn't be. If we can get this resolved, I'll be a happy camper," he said. Thee replied by saying, quote, "It will not be resolved by citizens of the city of Monahans paying to fix your sidewalk," end quote. Keel said, quote, "You want the citizens of Monahans to pay for infrastructure now when they are not responsible for it. There has to be some integrity here, and obviously I'm wasting my breath," end quote. Thee ended the public comment section of the meeting by saying, quote, "I will follow the city of Monahans ordinance and state law," end quote. In other business, the council approved charging off delinquent utility accounts. Resolution 2024-006, which will write off $12,200 in delinquent utility bills on the recommendation of City Auditor Smith and Reeves, P.C. It's simply something that is uncollectible, makes our books look bad, and we're not going to get it anyway, Thieves said. Thee said delinquent accounts are generally written off after 3 years. Quote, "We keep a copy of all those in our files in case they decide to come back someday," he added. Along with Thee, Mayor Adam Steen and council members Jeppy Wilson, Calvin Carroll, Richard Hawkins, Gerald Stave, and Ivy Valenzuela were all present, as was City Attorney Justin Till. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. The Council will meet again on February 27th in the Council Chambers of City Hall, located at 112 West 2nd Street at 3 p.m. The meeting is open to the public. Commissioners approve $41 million in jail, Sheriff's Office. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Ward County Commissioners gave Butler Cohen Design and Build the green light to proceed with the next step in beginning the new Sheriff's Office and Jail project during Monday morning's regular Commissioners meeting. Kenny Burns of Burns Architecture was in attendance, as were Sean Butler, Justin Harris, and Josh Contreras, all of Butler Cohen Design and Build, to present a comprehensive bid plan for the building of the Sheriff's Office and Jail. In April of 2023, Kenny Burns gave the commissioners a rough estimate based on the cost at the time. The estimate was for approximately $39 million. The court at that time agreed to hire Burns Architecture to put a design together. Butler Cohen Design and Build was the construction company Burns found to put together a bid package. The package originally came in at $42.6 million, but has been cut down to $41.6 million because the county can provide some of the work and equipment during the first phase of the project, such as bringing in fill dirt for the site. Quote, "The duration of the project is expected to be 65 weeks, 15 months," Butler told the court. Ward County Judge Greg Holly gave the commissioners his own opinion of the project by saying, quote, "We need to do this project now while we still have a usable facility. At some point in the future, it will become a necessity. We have the money set aside in building funds for the hospital expansion, the ballparks, and this new sheriff's office and jail, and costs are only going to get higher each year. We can comfortably handle the project without hampering any of our smaller projects," end quote. Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna said, quote, "I am all right with this. The cost is a bit higher, but it's something we need," end quote. In another opinion, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms said, quote, "I think it is the right thing to do at this time. Let's get it done," end quote. Precinct 1 and 3 Commissioners Tino Sanchez and Dexter Nichols agreed with the opinions that had been expressed. The vote was unanimous to proceed with the project. In other agenda items, the commissioners agreed to approve a resolution authorizing a joint primary election and a joint runoff primary election for the upcoming election. In other words, the Republican and Democratic voting will take place at the same location. They also voted to approve the agreement with CIRA, who provides the county website and email service. In other regular business, approval was given to the past meeting's minutes, the budget amendments for the hospital and county. They approved payment of the county bills, as well as giving a yes to the officer's report and the audit for the tax assessor collector tax account and escrow account. All commissioners were present for the Monday, February 12th meeting. The next commissioners' meeting will be on Monday, February 26th at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse at 400 South Allen. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County could call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. hospital managers approved purchase of $535,000 CT machine. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward Memorial Hospital Board of Managers approved the purchase of a new CT computed tomography machine during the Thursday evening regularly scheduled board meeting. A CT computed tomography scan is a type of imaging test. Like an X-ray, it shows structures inside your body. But instead of creating a flat 2D image, a CT scan takes dozens to hundreds of images of your body. To get these images, a CT machine takes X-ray pictures as it revolves around you. The CT scanner used at the hospital now is what is referred to as a 16-slice scanner machine, which is an older model. Quote, the new CT scanner machine will be a 64-slice scanner, meaning it will be able to scan quicker, which is less time for the patient to be in the scanner ring, less radiation, and clearer imaging. The new scanner will also be able to perform calcium scoring and bone density. A coronary calcium scan is a special computerized tomography scan of the heart. It looks for calcium deposits in the heart arteries. A buildup of calcium can narrow the arteries and reduce blood flow to the heart, Ward Memorial Hospital Administrator and CEO Leticia Rodriguez said. A coronary calcium scan may show coronary artery disease before you have symptoms. These results can help determine the risk of heart attacks or strokes, Rodriguez added. The approved cost of the scanner was $535,900, with the option to add, in the future, a software update to create a better advantage to treat cardiac patients. The future software cost will be an additional $84,000. Both costs will come from the Hospital Reserve Fund to be paid in full on purchase. Quote, we have the money and will not have to make payments, Rodriguez said. The quarterly Shining Star Award went to emergency room physician's assistant Shane Bailey. The Shining Star recipient is determined by recommendations from their co-workers. His co-workers had nice things to say about working with him, such as, Shane is a positive co-worker and a helpful team player. While another said, the way he handles the chaos in the ER is to be recognized and is appreciated. Also said, his ways of teaching others, such as PA students and co-workers, is awesome. Another said, he is an exceptional caregiver to our community. The Shining Star recipient gets a framed award at their own parking spot for the next 3 months. In other regular business, the board approved paying the bills. Chief Nursing Officer Vince Gore presented the quarterly Quality Assurance Patient Improvement Report. Quote, we still are working on some areas needing improvement, but overall, everything is good, he said. Rodriguez told the board managers, the MedSurg renovations are about 2 weeks behind because to the weather, but they will catch up. No personnel changes and no credentialing was needed. The managers approved the past meeting's minutes and gave approval to the budget amendments. All board managers were present for the meeting: Lisa Stewart, Frank Heslin, Angel Fuentes, Gerald Carlson, John Fawcett, Jeff Burdick, Mickey Mitchell, and Leticia Rodriguez. The next regularly scheduled WMH board meeting will be on Thursday, February 22nd at 6:15 p.m. in the WHM Physical Therapy Cardiac Unit at 420 South Ike. The hospital board meets every first and third Thursday of the month at 6:15 p.m. Anyone who would like to address the board about any concerns needs to contact Rodriguez at 943-2511, extension 176, to explain their concern and ask to be placed on the next board meeting agenda. Reagan facing sex assault charge. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man was arrested last week on a charge of alleged sexual assault of a child under the age of 17. J. Shaquille LaDonda Reagan, age 30, of 504 South Leon Street, was arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail on February 6th on an arrest warrant, charging him with sexual assault, a second-degree felony. Officers first learned of the alleged offense on January 28th after the female victim and her mother contacted the police department, stating she was sexually assaulted by a male subject, later identified as Reagan. Quote, on February 1st, officers spoke to the victim again, and she explained she had been sexually assaulted by Reagan a few times over a three-month period, Chief of Police Christopher Quintana said. Quintana added, officers spoke with the suspect later the same day, and through the investigation, officers were able to obtain an arrest warrant for Reagan. Bond for Reagan was set at $25,000, and he posted the bond and was released. If convicted, Reagan could face between 2 and 20 years imprisonment and or a fine of up to $10,000. Eaton accused of slapping or choking woman and child. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A 29-year-old Monahans man was arrested last week for allegedly slapping and choking a woman and her minor child, according to police. On Sunday, February 4th, around 10:17 p.m., officers were called to the 500 block of East A Street in reference to a disturbance. According to Monahans Police Department Chief of Police Christopher Quintana, quote, upon arrival, officers spoke with Marie Brandenburg, who said a man, later identified as Tyler D. Eaton of 506 East A Street, had assaulted her and her child. Brandenburg told police Eaton slapped her and the 13-year-old juvenile during an altercation. Quote, the female and Eaton got into a more physical altercation, and Brandenburg told the officers he choked the juvenile, Quintana said. Brandenburg then said they were both able to get away from Eaton and call for help.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.
Impeding breathing or circulation. Bond was set at $3,000 for the first charge and $20,000 for the second charge. Eaton is currently being held on a parole violation on a previous conviction of burglary of a building.